I'm impressed with your notes there.
I know.
Normally you come in here just free and clear.
Just off the cuff.
You really do, and you've now taken the time to write some things down.
This is show prep.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields. What a week. What a week. What a week.
It's been a busy week.
It's been a busy week. And it started earlier than normal, huh?
Yes, it did.
Started a little earlier than normal Monday at 1.
With the budget.
That's right. That is Scott for budget.
That's right.
So we've got a lot to talk about. We have a special guest. This is going to be a long one. So I need everybody to just kind of.
It's going to be a long show. Good show.
I need everybody to just kind of settle in.
Yes.
You know, maybe get a cup of hot tea or some sort of charcuterie and just kind of put your feet up, get a warm blanket, and just listen.
Drive around the block one or two more times until you get to the end.
Right.
Of the show.
Or like drive to Orangeburg and back. And then I think that would, like from Columbia.
That's just one way.
You know, sometimes if I'm running to get dinner for the kids and I'm like, I'm going to run to Chick-fil-A, I don't tell anybody that it's the Chick-fil-A in Orangeburg. Not the one that's 1.38 miles from my house.
That line was really long this time, I guess.
Y'all, it was so busy. I don't know. It was like a bus of like an athletic team that stopped there coming out of town. It was crazy. But I've listened to an entire episode of a podcast.
Such a terrible reflection on your family.
I feel so much better. I almost feel as good as you should about answering this trivia question this week.
Oh, yes. The trivia question.
I feel like this is so easy.
You think so?
Almost insultingly easy.
Okay, good.
Especially for you
Watch me fumble through it like that
knowledge.
Person who was asked to define a certain term she was using and couldn't do it.
All right. Scott, the question this week
is,
how many municipalities in South Carolina have borough in the name, and I will say borough in quotes, B-O-R-O in quotes.
Not B-O-R-O-U-G-H.
That's correct.
Or B-U-R-R-O.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
This is, quote, B-O-R-O in quote.
B-O-R-O. Okay.
So please think about that. Mm. I'm going to need to know how many in the names.
That might be a little more difficult than you think.
Really?
Maybe.
No.
Okay.
I don't know. We're gonna have to start. We're gonna increase the difficulty on these trivia questions.
Yeah, give me a rating on this one. What's the level of difficulty from
on
like
a scale
1 to 5?
Of 1 to 5?
Yeah.
5 being the hardest.
Yes.
This is like a -5.
Oh, come on.
This is the easiest thing you've ever been given.
All right, very good.
Other than walking down and picking out your lunch every day from the freezer. This is the easiest thing you've ever done.
I bring my lunch every day.
So let's bring Joni in.
Yes.
And let's get an overview of what everybody did this week with the budget. And then after Joni is done with her segment, let's you and I talk about it a little bit in a different perspective.
Yeah, because that's all that happened in the House. But the Senate really pushed out some product this week.
They really did. But I want to also do a little bit of analysis.
Yes.
On the budget. But let's bring Joni in and talk about that for a second. And then we can go back to our analysis.
Let's do it.
Joni, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, it's been a while. I'm glad that you could take time out of your schedule.
Well, I have been a little busy this week.
Well, you have. I'm just glad that you're still upright.
Finally got some different guests. Our listener is going to be so excited and happy about that.
I think so, too. Our three.
Well, I mean, I take that back. I mean, we had Mayor Murray on a few weeks ago. So
that's right. And, you know, he'll
come
back.
Mixed it up a little bit.
He'll come back, and we'll have more people as we, you know, get further into it. And then when at session's over, we're really going to start to diversify.
We really need to play. We need to plan that out. We need to do some, sit down and write out a list.
Don't worry about
it
one bit.
I like lists.
Do you like a list?
I love a list.
I like a list so I can cross it off a list.
You have a list.
I have lots of lists in front of me.
All right, Joni, I want to start. Let's start from the very beginning.
Of what?
So the House of Representatives came in on Monday at 1 p.m.
1 p.m., yep.
And they immediately began debating not a budget item,
No.
But they began debating the economic development incentive package for an automotive industry to locate in Scott's backyard.
The Scout. Yeah.
Literally almost in my backyard.
Literally.
It's going to make traffic even worse.
In Get Scott's ready. Backyard. And that lasted until four-ish.
Four-ish, yeah. And actually, you know, my friend has an old Scout, and they're really cool. So
I'm excited about this. I'm really excited. I really hope that they're going to be somewhat affordable.
I hope so.
I would love an electric Scout.
Based on some of the debate we've heard, they're not for the common man.
No, that was the quote.
They're
yeah.
for this. They started like $66,000. Yeah. You know, I saw a sticker on a used Bronco at the Honda dealership this morning.
Okay.
$71,382.
That's insane.
What?
What's a new one cost?
Less than that.
That's what I thought. It's I had to look at it twice because I thought I'd misread the number.
That's insane.
$71,000.
For a used one on the used car lot.
All right. So, Joni, they started in and kind of explain, they started on part 1A. So there are two parts to the budget. Start. Kind of explain part 1A and part 1B.
So 1A is your money. That's going to be your money. Okay. 1B is your provisos. And so they give us an amendment sheet, and they have 1Bs in there, 1As in there.
They're all kind of mixed in.
They're all kind of mixed in. And this sheet keeps coming. Like anytime someone adds a new amendment, we get a new amendment sheet. I like it broken down by section.
Right.
That way we can see all the sections. And what they did on Monday is they went through 1A, and if there weren't any amendments, and they give them time to offer up their amendments. But, you know, they've had the weekend before because Ways and Means staff. They know it's coming. Yep. Ways and Means staff were the entire weekend working on those amendments. And the speaker made it very clear. It is your right to conceal your amendment if you do not want to tell anyone, discuss this with anyone, or if you want, you know, the support of everyone, you may want to discuss this with everyone before you offer the amendment. So they had an idea.
And they had all of last week since the budget has to sit on the desk for a week.
Yes, that's correct.
So, you know, they have that amount of time to go through it, even though it's just, how thick is it? I mean, it's 3 inches thick, 4 inches thick.
So. Well, and the reason that they give them that week, Scott and Casey, is because a couple of years ago, members were not given that 1 week for the printed budget to lay on the desk. That's what they call it when the budget just lays there. So they literally got the budget the first day.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so members, I remember because I was staff then, they hold up the budget in the air and said, "You expect us to know what's in here. You just put this on our desk." So now they give them more time. And that also allows more time for them to think about things they want to do and change to the budget.
Right. So they started around 4 o'clock in part 1A, and any amendments that are in part 1A have to do with money.
Yes.
So they went through that, and there are 118 sections.
So in 1B, there's 118 sections. Okay. 1A, I think there's 113. I have to go back and look.
That sounds right.
So
they have to
more.
Go because of a House rule change that happened years ago. They have to take a roll call vote on every section.
Yes.
So when they close a section, they have to roll call vote it.
Yep.
And then move on to the next one. They can't just say, all those in favor say aye, all those opposed nay, and the section's adopted.
Unfortunately not.
Right. How late did you stay on Monday? And Scott, you and Erica were there also covering.
We were all
so y'all
there.
Were kind of covering the gallery, the lobby, and all points in between. So how late did y'all stay?
It was till midnight. They didn't finish till midnight. So
that's miserable.
It is. And then you have to go back. So just because they finished, I went back to make sure we didn't miss any amendments
that
were in 1A. And we, fortunately for us, we didn't have any amendments in 1A. And what they did this year, though, and they didn't do this last year, and I really liked it, they close out sections that don't have amendments. That's not uncommon. They do that. But what they did this year is they also closed out sections in 1B.
Yeah, usually they'll take 1As on the first day. Mm-hmm. Work through that until they get that done. Then they take up 1Bs.
Right.
But they went straight to the 1Bs after they closed out the 1As that didn't have amendments. So Joni's right. What that did too, well, maybe we shouldn't say from a strategic standpoint.
I know. I think they realized it though.
Well, you're probably right. What that did was rob the members of a little bit extended period to propose amendments to the 1B parts.
To think about things.
To think about it. Yep. That's right.
And there were 80 some odd amendments?
I think there were 92 total.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's between 1A and 1B. So 1A had roughly 40. Okay. 1B had a little more than 40. And there were a lot of amendments in 1A dealing with DEI.
Right. Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
That is correct.
Dealing with colleges and universities.
Not Dale Earnhardt Incorporated.
No.
But I knew that he would work in there somehow.
That's what I think of when I think of DEI. And we're going to talk more about that, or we'll talk about the culture wars and how they are seeping into just about every
that
debate.
has added
yes.
another layer
yes.
of yep. of that. So Joni,
I'd cut you off in saying about the DEI amendments. Representative Adam Morgan from Taylor's proposed to take money from each of the universities and colleges, public institutions
and,
in the state.
And state institutions as well.
And state institutions that they reported to the General Assembly or reported to him that they used to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion on their campuses.
Right. That's correct.
And so... But because of the way he introduced those amendments, he did not specify that they were to cease funding DEI programs or efforts. He just simply said, well, we're going to take that amount of money that they said that they're spending on it now. And then presumably they would not fund those. But as was pointed out during the debates, well, the universities could just make up that money somewhere else in their budget and continue to fund it. So,
But you're also taken away from veterans and you're taken away from pregnant women because that was not – it opened up a can of worms that I don't think they intended to do.
Yeah. I think the intent was to get at those things that revolve – those DEI programs that revolve around or encompass race.
And gender. Because that
gender,
was mentioned several times.
Whereas DEI is a much more
broader,
inclusive
exactly.
effort than just those two things, race and gender.
Right.
So that took up a long time.
And I think from Tuesday's debate, from what we heard, that he was pulling down those amendments because they plan to introduce a separate piece of standalone legislation.
Yeah, so the Freedom Caucus actually met with leadership, and thankfully they had a great meeting, and they took those down. They tabled the one that they were currently working with, and then they withdrew the rest of them. I mean, that saved us hours.
I took 15 or 20 amendments down easily.
Hours worth
of debate. Monday night, you stayed till y'all were there till midnight, and then they came back Tuesday morning at like
9:30.
At like 9:30.
But they didn't really start to 10:30. I literally was in the garage passing members, and because, you know, I'm not going to get there while they're doing roll call.
Right, exactly. And that takes 30 minutes.
I'm not a newbie, but neither were the members getting there when they were doing roll call because I was passing them on the way in.
And so then, when they closed out 1A, that's when we knew about local government fund for sure.
Yeah.
So, Joni, tell me about what about local government fund?
It's fully funded. So, we got the full 5% increase this year. That's roughly $13.2 million. It's great. We got additional $12.5 million last year. So, I do not anticipate us not getting more than the 5% because the money just keeps going up and the general fund's going to go up. So, the max is 5%.
Right.
So, we're at the 5%. So, we are fully funded.
And then... let's talk about some of the provisos.
Okay.
There are other line item money items, and you can see the details in From the Dome to Your Home on Friday, like we did for the House Ways and Means Committee version. It'll be a line item to show you how much, you know, and just touch on a couple of those for me right now as far as a couple.
The biggest one last year, because it was so high, was the PIBA. The premium increase was 18.1% last year. Again, last year.
Right.
So this year is 3.8%.
Well, and that's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. And that 3.8% reflects the governor's recommendation for the yearly gynecological visit for women. So roughly that 3.8% equates to $25 per person.
Okay.
On the plan.
Okay.
So not
so
huge.
That's an increase.
That's an increase.
And the
wait a minute. Even for me?
Yes.
Okay.
We gotta spread it out.
All right. Gotcha.
You care about women.
Oh, well, of course, yes.
So what a couple of other money line item things that...
Yes. So the PTSD for firefighters, I mean, that was right. recurring money from last year. Last year, they gave an additional $250 in recurring dollars. So that
$250,000.
I mean, $250,000. Yeah. Thank you.
I know you have numbers swarming all over your head right now.
I appreciate that. So total is $250,000 in recurring dollars for PTSD for law enforcement and firefighters.
For each.
Mm-hmm. No. Total.
Total.
$750,000.
Okay, so
total.
They added to the $500,000.
That's correct.
Okay, gotcha.
VSafe got funded in the budget.
Perfect.
$3 million. It was legislated last year. It passed, mm-hmm. But it was unfunded last year. So now we have $3 million for VSafe.
And this will be grant monies for firefighting equipment.
That's no. something yep. else you should care about.
Absolutely.
Yes. Does that paid departments are eligible for that too. Is that right? I believe so. Everybody is.
They added that in there. And this...
if you're an organized and, for lack of a better term, a certified department with the South Carolina Office of State Fire Marshal, then...
You're eligible.
Okay, good.
And this actually, because of the funding, it increases the percentage of the grant. So it was, I think, like... 5%, and now spread out is 12.5%. So it's a big increase for them. They can buy more than a glove.
So then on Tuesday, they started in on the 1B, mm-hmm. the chunk of the 1B provisos, right? Yep,
they did. And there were, 40 plus amendments. And then we only had a couple amendments that we were, okay, what is this one? And there was one that they call it a substitute amendment. An amendment's put up on the desk. The member makes a change, so he substitutes his amendment for mm-hmm. something else. So substitute amendment 88 deals with return to work critical need for PORS, people in the police officer retirement system. And there is already a proviso that passed this year and last year mm-hmm. that says you can return to work if you have a 12-month break in service. So the difference between this new proviso mm-hmm. and the existing proviso is the new one is critical need, and you do not have to have that 12-month break in service.
And there's no cap to your salary.
But there is a caveat because... Casey, Scott.
Can't be simple.
I was about to say.
Can't be simple. So this,
don't make it easy, please.
This new proviso, they have to, these people who are returning to work has to go before the law enforcement council.
Okay. Training council.
Council. Mm-hmm. And a letter has to go to the Senate and the House. And so that has to be done by January 1st. So you're looking at roughly 6 months that you only have to hire these people back.
Okay. So I'm a cop. I'm a retired cop. I just retired.
Yeah.
Okay.
Under this
congratulations.
Under this proviso,
thank you for your service.
This proviso, if it gets adopted in the budget, would only be good until June 30 of next year, 2024.
That's correct, because it's a one-time temporary law.
The Law Enforcement Training Council has to I have to then apply to a local police department where I want to go back to work.
Yes.
That police department has to send my application to the Law Enforcement Training Council. Mm-hmm. Now, the Law Enforcement Training Council will have decided what the critical needs areas are, right? And what were some of the examples of that, Tony?
Just they don't have the help that they need. That was the biggest one. They don't have the people to fill the positions.
So, right. So like, let's say jailers, right?
Okay.
Prisons will undoubtedly
corrections officers will
undoubtedly be named as a critical need area, yeah. right? So I'm a correctional officer. I want to go back to work for the corrections department. I apply to the corrections department. The corrections department has to send to the Law Enforcement Training Council my application, if you will. And the Law Enforcement Training Council then tells the department yes or no.
No, they have to submit the report to the chairman of Ways and Means and the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee.
Well, this is after the report is done. Yep. Right. No. Okay. So the proviso wants to gauge the yep. interest or
gauge the
get
interest.
An idea of how many people are going to want to take advantage of this.
Yes.
The training council is then going to report to the General Assembly
by January 1st.
By January 1st of next year. Then what happens?
And then if it's approved, you get it.
So who approves it? The General Assembly?
The training council.
Well, wait. Why is the training council having a report to the General Assembly if the General Assembly is not going to do anything?
Got to have some kind of accountability. Everybody wants their fingers in it.
So they're just going to say, the Law Enforcement Training Council is going to say, we've got 100 people in four different areas of the state and disciplines who want to take advantage of this. They tell the General Assembly this, and then the training council says, yeah, you're hired.
We're going to approve these people. And they're just doing their due diligence. Listen, in the proviso, you asked us to do this. Here's the report. We've approved it. But now you're looking at from January to June.
Right. So it's all...
Why would you utilize this?
So you're probably only going to be able to work under this proviso for six months.
Yeah. So if I were you, I would do the 12-month brick and service and just utilize the other proviso.
Because that proviso is still in this version of the budget.
Yes, okay. Sir.
That is...
It's a lot.
That's a lot of paperwork, man.
Confusing. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why the training council... the General Assembly just doesn't leave it in the hands of the training council to say, yes, you've given us this charge. We're the professionals. We're the experts. And, you know, go on your merry way and let's get these critical areas
filled.
Well, and it doesn't say, I'm looking at it right now, it doesn't say that the House or the Senate has a vote. It just says they have to give them their position on whether or not they're approving these people. So it's just a report.
Okay.
Law Enforcement Training Council, let's see. They just have to report to the General Assembly how... they're probably looking at numbers. They're probably trying to figure out...
Let's think about this then.
How many people are returning to work.
The budget goes live July the 1st.
Right.
Based on what you just said, Joni, it sounds to me like the Law Enforcement Training Council could tell me, yeah, you can go ahead and go. And then when they report to the General Assembly in January, hey, Scott's working at the Department of Corrections again.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So they don't have to wait until January the 1st.
No, they just have to do that for the reporting.
To tell somebody that they can go to work. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's better.
It's better.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's better. Okay.
I hope it happens that way. The latter version.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
So on Tuesday, the rumor was at the State House that it was going to be midnight, right?
Yes, that was a horrible rumor.
And then a lot of those amendments came down, and it ended up being y'all got home for supper.
Yeah. It was my anniversary. I got to celebrate with a glass of champagne.
How about that?
They were done at 5:30 on Tuesday.
Happy anniversary. So
thank you.
They gave the
bill. How many years has it been?
14.
14
that
years.
That is amazing.
A blissful matrimony.
And I'm still 21.
Congratulations. I was a child bride. And so they gave it second reading on Tuesday, and then they came back on Wednesday morning to give the budget third reading, and they also had to approve this automotive incentive package because they had money in the budget for that. So they had to, that had to kind of go along
with it. That was in the last section of the budget. And then they also had to tell everyone, you know, they had to read the letter from Frank Rainwater.
Right,
that
to certify
everything. Because South Carolina, we have to have a balanced budget.
Right.
And Casey, you touched on this earlier in part 1A. Anytime a member offers up an amendment that deals with money, you have to, if I want to give Casey Fields $250,000 of state money.
That would help.
I've got to take away from Scott Slatton.
Right.
You know, you've got you got to show where you're taking it.
Sure. No, I completely approve that.
Which makes things a little, you know, contentious over there on the floor.
That's right.
Because
you have to show where you're taking it from.
Well, and that's why they want you to kind of talk about your amendments beforehand so that you can justify why you're taking away.
Because
it puts it
in the years when I was lobbying for South Carolina First Steps to school readiness, and we would try to get extra money, they would say, well, where are you going to take it from? And you'd say, well, are you taking it from the senior citizens? Are you taking it from babies? Are you taking it from
veterans?
Are you taking it from teachers? So it really does make you think about it, talk about it, and understand what is in the budget from the beginning, from the House Ways and Means version, instead of waiting on the floor to move money around.
100%. Right. Which underscores the reason you may have to make requests for money
in subcommittee well before it gets
to the floor, because you're not going to balance.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's right. You don't want to be the one throwing it out of balance having it all.
The best amendment in a budget is the one that passed the full committee, because it goes in a packet.
That's right.
It is concealed in there, and it is really not discussed on the floor.
Unless you're changing something. Changing or adding something.
Yeah.
But a packet amendment is the best.
Speaking of, you want to talk about the one that stayed in there that was discussed very briefly that we've talked about before already.
Yeah.
A couple of times on this short-term little podcast.
Rental.
Yeah.
On the short-term rental. So in the packet, it was 113.SR, but now it has an official number, 113.11, and it prohibits local government from banning short-term rentals, and they will take away your local government fund if you do. What else do they say they'll do to you here?
Well, you got to have, you got to offer incentives for affordable housing.
That's
and
the
do
caveat.
Some other things.
Yep.
It, the again, the key word being prohibit. No city or town across the state that we know of,
right,
prohibits.
Does a cap, is that a prohibition?
That is not a prohibition, because there are,
there's still,
you
there
still
is
have
still
short-term
rentals.
Right. There's still the opportunity,
right,
to rent your property for as a short-term rental.
And Scott, that was brought up, that definition of prohibiting,
yeah,
during the budget. And so we are we going to talk about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was specifically questioned whether or not that prohibits cities from regulating short-term rentals.
Yep.
And the representative on Ways and Means that asked that question was told that no, that is not the intent of that proviso.
That is correct.
So we'll see if it stays in the budget once it gets over to the Senate.
Well, you know, this language is very similar to the language that they put in last year.
Yeah,
so
that was not ultimately adopted in the state budget.
That is correct.
So now that the House of Representatives, they have adopted their version of the budget. Yep. So now it goes across the hall to Senate Finance. Mm-hmm. And Senate Finance Committee, they have already been meeting with their state agencies.
Yes.
So they expect to take it up when, Joni, in the next couple of weeks?
Next couple of weeks. Actually, I got an email today from a Senate staffer in Groom's office, mm-hmm, who said, hey, I'm going to touch base with you next week about testifying before Constitutional Sub. Which we love to do because we just love to say thank you for,
right,
following
that's
the formula.
Exactly right.
Yeah, on the local government fund. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that process has kind of, the Senate started hearing kind of in tandem, right?
They
were kind of going at the same time.
Yeah.
So that will make the Senate process getting to full finance faster.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And they'll be somewhat similar, especially the state agencies' testimonies. It's going to be the same. Their,
yeah,
ask, mm-hmm, is not going to change. Mm-hmm. They're at their FTEs, what they need.
Right.
It's going to be the same.
Well, maybe one constitutional officer is going to.
Well,
we'll talk about that later.
There might be one that's different.
Yeah.
There's a lot of amendments about him.
When do we expect there to be another estimate on revenues?
We just had one February 15th.
Okay.
So there won't be another one until April. So
we'll be in between maybe, mm-hmm, Senate Finance version and full Senate,
yep,
version when the next estimate comes out.
We'll have the next estimate before H2.
Okay.
So that,
and tell me what H2 is.
So because the budget originates in the House, mm-hmm, and then goes to the Senate sends it back to the House, and we call that H2. That is the House's second chance at, mm-hmm, the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do what they do, and then the Senate will non-concur, and they'll go to conference, because it always goes to conference.
I'm just going to guess. I'm going to guess that they're going to be able to, with the new revenue estimate that comes up later in the spring, I bet it's going to wipe out a big chunk of that Scout Motors incentive package in terms of new money.
New money?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think there'll be a lot of new money to play with?
No. What I'm saying is there will be more new money, and that will buy down that $1.3 billion,
right,
if you will.
Y'all,
right?
In the 20-something years that I've been doing this, there has been one budget that I can remember where the House concurred.
Oh, really?
And they didn't go to conference. And everybody was stunned.
Did they all have vacation plans?
I don't know.
Were they all booked at a
DBR? I just remember when the House was like, yeah, well, you know, that looks good. We were all like,
what just happened?
What? Huh?
Yeah.
And it was glorious and wonderful. And then that happened that one time.
Yeah.
It was just kind of almost an accident,
yeah,
I think.
That's crazy.
Was that a Dan Cooper Ways and Means?
It could have been a Bobby Harrell Ways and Means.
Yeah.
It could have gone back that far.
Yeah.
Or
wow,
maybe it was a Dan Cooper. I don't quite remember. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well,
when I say 20 years, I think like the 1980s.
Right, right. No.
You know, that is
not 20 years.
That's not long before,
yes,
you came here.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct.
So what we didn't see, though, in the House version were the special projects. So the House, they reserve their right now. They did not offer up any special projects. Those are those earmarked projects.
Yeah, who said yesterday that there were no earmarks in the budget? I can't remember. Somebody was on the floor talking about it.
I don't know.
Was it Nathan Ballantyne?
Maybe, because they basically told them to be patient.
Yeah, I think
it's coming.
I think he was saying, hey, you'll notice that there's no earmarks in this budget.
And this budget.
In this budget, yeah.
H2, things are going to be a little different.
No, that's right.
You know, $700 million is what I was told is the amount that they're going to allot for those special projects. But we'll see. I guess it all depends on that big estimate coming.
Whatever the estimate is, interesting.
Joni, any other parting words on the budget? I really, let me just go ahead and speak on behalf of all cities and towns and say how much we appreciate you and Scott and Erica hanging in there, staying there most of the night, and just monitoring every little thing. I mean, you would send me pictures, and I've seen Joni notes before, and I've seen how you make all these detailed notes about the different sections. And I mean, just the text messages, we were all texting up until 11:30 Monday night, and, you know, going back and forth and letting each other know stuff. And it's just such a wonderful, a great team to work on. And I really, really appreciate y'all's, all of y'all's hard work on this.
It does take a team, because you can't go to the restroom without like saying, hey, I need someone to like watch
and listen. Cause it goes so fast.
It goes so fast.
Yeah.
And you can turn around and, you know, a DEI amendment was adopted and it just screws the whole thing up.
Right. Exactly. All the money for one thing.
Exactly.
And it's out of balance and they're taking it from you and everything else. Yeah.
Step one is concluded. Step two starts in the Senate, and step three will be the conference committee. So
that's right.
We still got a ways to go.
Yeah, that is correct. And then I'm going on vacation.
Amen. Joni, thanks for coming.
Thanks, guys.
After hearing Joni's explanation and her kind of overview of the budget, tell me your impressions of, I mean, I know you were up there. What are your impressions of the budget process and how kind of we've been from the very beginning? We started this session with discussion on the pod about culture wars.
Yeah.
How has it seeped into the budget process?
So every year, it seems that the budget gets wrapped up in a lot of amendments that seek to address some sort of issue that individual members have.
It's usually abortion.
Well, not even that.
That's kind of like a...
Not even that. I'm thinking about, you know, somewhat legitimate policy issues that individual members care about, or they've got some beef over some particular event that took place related to a state agency or something, and so they introduce an amendment to try and fix that. You didn't see that this year because it was all of that, what I would call more regular type of amendments, has been supplanted by these culture war issues.
Mm-hmm. And we've added a couple to the list of things that have been our regulars for the last couple of years.
This whole multiple series of amendments to defund the colleges and the universities.
Right, Joni talked about that for a little bit.
That are providing these DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion programs. I don't know when these things became
the target.
Such a boogeyman.
Right. They became a target.
They warrant the amount of fighting that took place over them. And as Todd Rutherford pointed out, you know, DEI is not just about race and gender. DEI also encompasses other things like people with special needs, veterans that are on campuses. There's programming for those folks. You know, Carolina Life and Clemson Life programs are excellent programs that are trying to integrate special needs students into the normal college setting that they might not otherwise get to take advantage of. That is DEI,
right?
Under the definition of this. And I don't know why we would want to discourage those discussions or take funding away from programs like that shouldn't be controversial, but it's just more proof that these culture war issues have permeated into just about everything that comes along.
That's right.
And it's visibly frustrating the Republican majority. Now, the fact that the Republican majority and along with the Democrats defeated every one of the amendments that were put up by the Freedom Caucus.
Right.
It's not going to deter the Freedom Caucus.
No, it's not.
Going forward. It's not. But it's still a tremendous divisive tactic that is really unproductive when you see how easily those issues are dismissed by the majorities. So, you know, until they can win more elections, mm-hmm. then they need to figure out a different way to try and achieve their goals.
I don't think they're
interested in changing their tactics at this point.
Another issue that came up was they also kind of in tandem with the budget, they had to debate this economic incentive package for the automotive for Volkswagen to
yes.
bring the Scout production facility to Blythewood.
Editor's note.
Okay.
You and I attributed the Scout plant last week to Volvo.
It was Volkswagen. Right.
Yeah.
They have also talked about how Volkswagen is a woke company and how they produce ESG. Is that what it is?
ESG
is that
is
some sort of environmental
social governance. So companies are, you know, their boards in some cases are taking environmental, social, and governance
positions
okay. or, you know, tenants.
And they were upset about that when the Freedom Caucus was arguing against the Scout
and that's
package.
That's just another example where we're going to potentially turn away a minimum 4,000 employee,
a job producer,
the largest vehicle manufacturer in the world because they have some board policy or, you know, they ascribe to considering the environment and social issues whenever they're making decisions. As the traditional conservative position with regard to fiscal issues, that was raised. There were concerns and questions about, you know, is this a wise use of state funds?
Well, Scott, I think everybody is very hesitant because of the Panthers.
Well, I said it last week.
Deal.
Yeah, I said
that,
it last week,
and everybody has brought that up in both chambers. Everybody is nervous because we committed so much to that and it fell flat.
But as I said, Volkswagen is not run by a single
right.
egomaniac who
right.
threw a temper tantrum and took his ball and went back mm-hmm. to Charlotte.
Right.
That's not the case with Volkswagen.
That's right.
They can't and don't operate that way. So, I mean, I understand that. But, you know, and the fiscal questions that were asked in the House and the Senate, legitimate questions, that's fine. You know, as a policy for our state,
sure.
should we be making this investment? I think the overwhelming answer is yes. But to start off by trying to stop this effort because of some board policy or
right.
some stated desire to consider some of these other factors in decision making is not terribly productive. But that's just my opinion.
And until
that's my opinion.
You know, basic math. Until you can get a yeah. majority of votes, which I think in the House is what, 62, 64, something like that?
Yeah, 63.
Until you can get a majority, you're going to have a hard time passing legislation.
Right. Oh, that's,
and all that is 20 votes, 15 votes, 12 votes, that don't get bills passed.
And this week in the budget and the Scout bill were the two latest examples mm-hmm. where their tactics are not working. Now,
right.
we'll see. We heard that perhaps there's going to be a DEI prohibition bill mm-hmm. coming down the pipe. Okay,
will they get more people to support that?
Well, perhaps, and maybe this was the give and take
mm-hmm.
that the people in charge said. Okay, if you'll pull down all these DEI amendments, because there were 20 or
yeah, there were
30
a lot,
other a
in
bunch
both
of them.
1A and 1B.
Pull those down and in exchange for we'll give you a chance at a bill. Okay. Then I guess it worked.
The same chance that every bill has, right?
Right.
Right.
I guess their tactic worked in that sense, but golly, it sure does. It sure does divide the room.
It divides the room, Scott, and it takes up precious time from discussing economic issues,
yeah.
Economical fairness issues, education, you know, criminal justice reform. It takes up time away. It takes time away from important issues that affect the everyday life of regular South Carolinians
yeah.
like you.
I meant to say
older South Carolinians like you.
I I mean, I'm biased because I view everything through a city lens, through a city management or a town.
Is there any other way to view it?
Right. And because municipal officials are about getting things done and, you know, in a serious way and not right. wasting time and tilting at windmills.
Yep.
But that's not how it works in the General Assembly. And it's continued to work that way for however long we've been a state. So it's not going to change.
Let's talk a little bit about something else that's going on in the General Assembly that is the first that I've ever witnessed in my time.
Yes.
So I'm sure everybody has read the paper, and the Comptroller General, Richard Ekstrom, who has been in office since 2002, I believe.
2003, yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm.
He made a slight accounting error.
$3.5 billion. It was an oversight.
And the Senate put this forth to this kind of, they charged the Senate Finance Constitutional Subcommittee with investigating this. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been bills. There is an Articles of Impeachment resolution that has been introduced in the House by a bipartisan group of lawmakers.
Yeah.
In this state, the House impeaches and the Senate tries.
Right.
So if you're impeached in the House, then it goes on to a trial in the Senate.
I think underlying this is a desire in both bodies to see him gone.
Right. So the Senate presented their findings, their research findings on Wednesday.
Yes.
And the bottom line, I mean, let's I don't want to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
I didn't give up real candy for Lent. The Senate wants him gone as well.
Yes.
It's just a different they are proposing a different pathway.
Yeah.
So they introduced today, Thursday, a resolution to get rid of him.
So there's a couple of ways that constitutional officers can be removed from office.
And mind you, constitutional officers are elected by the public.
Right.
They're elected by the voting public, as opposed to cabinet agencies who are cabinet heads are appointed by the governor.
Who work for
and confirmed by the Senate.
So one way is to impeach and try.
Right.
And then the Senate could force that person from office. But that can take a long time. The other way is found in Article 15, Section 3 of the Constitution, as was discussed by Senator Larry Grooms from Bono yesterday, where by two-thirds of each body, the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. could vote to remove him from office, in which case in that case, the governor would have to then remove the Comptroller General from office.
And that's two-thirds of the membership.
Two-thirds of each body.
Right, yes, of the membership.
Of the membership.
Not present in voting, but of the membership.
So
two-thirds of 46 and two-thirds of 124.
So Senator Grooms presented that, and Senator Chip Campson from Isle of Palms agreed and provided some good analysis like he does, always does.
I was about to say, he's a brilliant constitutionalist.
That this is a quicker and potentially cleaner way, mm-hmm. aside from him resigning, to get him out of office.
Right.
Now, the governor has come out publicly and said, hey, this should be left up to the voters in 2026 when the Comptroller General is up for re-election.
But I don't think the General Assembly wants to wait that long.
The General Assembly does not want to wait that long.
And so, since we are a legislatively controlled state, they have the ability to force the governor's hand.
Now, given the governor's position, it'll be interesting to see if he agrees. Let's say they do this. Let's say they take the two-thirds votes in each and get two-thirds votes in each.
He doesn't have a choice.
Well, he might say, I refuse to, you know, discharge that duty. I don't know that
I don't think he can.
But what happens if he does?
That's part of his duty to carry that out.
We live in a post-truth world and a host laws and rules, abide by the rules world, Casey. So it'll be interesting.
It really will be. I've never seen this before.
That,
I did see the, the Mark Sanford debacle. I did live through that.
Thomas Ravenel resigned after he was indicted.
Well, was the smart thing.
That was
to
the
do.
Easy. And of course, Comptroller General Ekstrom has said, "I'm not resigning."
Repeatedly.
Yes, I'm not quitting.
Senator Sandy Sin from Charleston, she asked Senator Grooms today, actually. She stood up and she said, isn't it just easier if he resigns and we don't have to do this? And Senator Grooms said, he issued a statement. I saw it in the paper and he, you know, he said he's not. And Senator Sen's response was, okay, great. Well, that'll make this easier.
That makes it easier. Makes it easier for the Senate to make its decision as to whether or not to go forward.
For unanimous consent to add the role of the Senate on the resolution, and nobody objected.
That's right.
So if I was a betting woman,
at least
I would bet.
Yeah, at least in the Senate, I think you got 2/3.
At least in the Senate, and the bipartisan nature of the, you know, the bipartisan members in the House that are agreeing on this.
Yeah. I think part of the problem too, Casey, is that I don't know that the Comptroller General has expressed any contrition over this.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
If he has, I've missed it. Please correct me, but I've not seen it. He's been fairly defiant throughout this entire episode.
So we talked about the House budget. That's what they did this week. House and Senate passed the Scout package. Mm-hmm. They both did that. Let's talk about, there are four bills that I just want to briefly touch on in the Senate that I think everybody needs to know about. The House passed. I'm going to do a little history lesson really quick. The House passed a bill allocating the rest of the state ARP money.
Yes.
That's the water and sewer infrastructure projects. They sent it over to the Senate. It got into Senate Finance. Volkswagen said, we're going to build Scout, you know, vehicles.
In Blackwood.
We need the incentive package. So the Senate took that House bill because it had already passed the House, making it an easier vehicle. They amended it with the package, sent it back to the House. They concurred.
Right.
Therefore, the Senate had to introduce a new ARP bill.
Right.
So that bill, Senate Bill 604, got out of subcommittee, got out of full committee, and was given second and third reading this week on the floor. So that is now moving back to the House, which I do not anticipate any problems. That moving through House Ways and Means. And
which Erica Wright has explained would take the remaining ARP money that the state has.
That's right.
And fund more projects, RIA, Rural Infrastructure Authority projects, not new applications, but where RIA was going to be able to fund, you know, X number of applications from last year,
right,
but not all of them. This money will allow them to fund more of those projects.
Not all of them, but more than they were
with last year's ARP money.
So the good news is it's moving.
Yeah, and I hope the House will take it up quickly.
When they get back from furlough. So the House doesn't come back till, I think, the 28th, Tuesday the 28th.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so next, also that got third reading, is the Sober Homes bill, Scott, that you have been following for quite some time.
A long time. So Sober Homes are recovery homes that are, they come in different iterations, but the basic model is you have a group of people who are recovering from addiction. They live together. They hold each other accountable. They're in a home that is owned by a recovery association or some sort of organization or company that's in that business. That business is entirely unregulated in South Carolina, so that you've got some unscrupulous operators who take rent monies from these people who are trying to get back on the road to recovery. They take advantage of them. They don't provide the services. They don't do the things that they were promised in exchange for the fees and the rents that they pay. So, and that's something that we've talked about for a number of years. But Senator Billy Garrett from McCormick introduced a bill, Senate Bill 445, that would require DEOTIS to...
That's the South Carolina Drug Abuse...
Other alcohol services, something like that. Yeah. We know what DEOTIS is.
Right.
This bill would charge DEOTIS with finding an organization, presumably a national accrediting organization, to write some rules about what you have to be and do in order to operate as a sober home in South Carolina. And then if you want to do that, then you get certified, essentially.
Right. Right.
So, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I think I mentioned that, you know, there was an odd piece of that, the original bill that said you could, even without the certification, you could keep operating because it was presented it as sort of a voluntary thing. Well, the bill was amended so that you have to be certified in order to be a sober home if this thing were to pass into law, which is a good thing for cities and towns.
Right.
Because it helps us make sure that when these things locate in our neighborhoods, that we have a reputable, or at least someone has vetted this organization as legitimate
and they're being responsible, held to some standards.
Precisely. Yeah, that's a good move going forward.
I'm going to go back to subcommittee, but on the floor also, actually today, Thursday, Senate Bill 330, the shoot 'em up utility bill.
Yes.
That was given second reading. That's been on the calendar for quite some time. And today they were able to, you know, move it one step closer to passing the Senate.
Tiered penalties for somebody who does damage to utilities to include cables.
Yeah.
Include cable
they
service,
did. They amended that in committee to include the cable line. So not just utility lines, but utility substations, cable lines, all of those things.
And of course, this is in response to the substation that got shot up in North Carolina back what, November, December, or something like that. Mr. Producer, when was that? Do you remember?
It was a while back. Yeah, it was before the holidays.
Yeah.
All right. The last bill, Scott, you have been working on with Senator Tom Davis from the Buford area, the affordable housing bill. Explain that to me and why should I care?
So Senate Bill 284 would add.
It got out of a finance subcommittee. Let me say that first.
Yeah, we testified in favor of that bill along with the county association.
Good.
And
it's nice to be able to agree.
And the Beaufort County Administrator, he came up and testified in favor. This bill, as we've talked about before, would add the development of workforce housing as an allowable expense for local accommodations taxes, local state accommodations taxes, local accommodations taxes, and hospitality taxes. So there's a menu of things that you can spend those monies on right now. The development of workforce housing would be added to that list of things that you could use the money for in order to try and address the workforce and affordable housing shortages that we have all over the state.
Because people are working in places that they cannot live.
Correct.
Right? They cannot afford to live.
Yeah.
So they're commuting in from other places.
The hospitality workers that work on Hilton Head Island all live in, not all, but many of them live as far away as Hampton.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because that's the only place that they can afford. And how long a drive is it from Hampton to Hilton Head?
Hours.
It's a long
drive.
Depending
on what 278 looks like. Like if it's, that's, you know, right. I mean, if there's an accident.
Exactly.
Then
so if this would help Hilton Head Island and any other city or town across the state bring some more affordable housing and workforce housing opportunities to their city, then that would be a good thing.
So absolutely.
We're hopeful that this bill is going to breeze out of the Senate Finance Committee and out of the Senate and over to the House, hopefully before crossover.
I think that was wonderful of you to spearhead this effort and work with Senator Davis. And
well, I think the credit goes to the cities and towns in Beaufort County in particular. They are the ones who engaged Senator Davis on that. He turned to us and asked us for some help on language,
which was an
easy lift.
Right.
And so we've continued to work with him on that and other things that we'll talk about in the future.
Speaking of an easy lift, let's go back to the trivia question.
Okay. All right.
How many municipalities in South Carolina have a borough in their name? Borough spelled B-O-R-O.
You know, so...
And I guarantee you, you'll have a story about each one of them.
This is my standard answer whenever you ask for the number. Okay. I always guess two to begin with.
Right. And you know what? You know what also two is from my Highway Patrol friends?
What?
The number of drinks everybody who is hammered that gets pulled over for a DUI. I just had a couple drinks.
You just default to two.
That's right. Okay.
All right. I can.
You
think,
say two. Okay.
And as usual, I can always think of two off the top of my head.
Well, I will go ahead and tell you that two is correct.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, then I've got it.
Two is correct. Go ahead.
Winsboro.
Okay.
And Walterboro.
Excellent. Can you tell me for a bonus what counties they are located
in? Winsboro is in Fairfield County.
That's right.
And Walterboro, as everybody in the world knows,
Free world.
Is in Colleton County.
And what a lovely, lovely town. Both of those are.
Let me give you two pieces of trivia about each. One piece of trivia about each of those towns.
I knew it was coming.
So Winnsboro has, I think, the longest running town clock, continuously running town clock, at least in the state, if not in the country.
Okay.
I might be wrong about that. If you've never seen it, it's really cool. It's right in the middle of town, and it's a city clock. And then Walterboro is home to one of two water standpipes.
Okay. So
in South Carolina,
we were in Walterboro at their beautiful wildlife center.
Yes.
For a regional advocacy meeting back in the fall. And you rode.
I drove by it.
Yes. So we could see the tower.
Yes. Its twin is in which city in the upstate?
I've told you this before, and I can't remember.
See, this is the reverse trivia, Mr. Producer. I can't remember. Asking the questions.
Oh, God.
It's Belton.
Belton, that's right.
Belton has a standpipe, the home of the Standpipe Festival. Pulling it all back together here.
Amazing. Amazing. Always your place for useless information about South Carolina cities and towns, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.